ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is healthiest for humans and also the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Mike Kudak, former chair of the Sierra Club grazing team, Ara Martirosyan, executive director of Sequoia Forest Keepers, and Todd Schumann of Wasteful and Reasonable Use. That's coming up later on ACT Radio, but first some news.
Helen Redout, a 79-year-old grandmother in Washington State, may have changed the way dairies operate across the country. In a landmark agricultural ruling, a federal judge defined cow manure and urine as solid waste. Until now, the dairy industry labeled urine and manure as nutrients. Helen Redout lives near Cow Palace, one of Washington's largest dairies. After years of feeling sick, Ms. Redout had her water tested, and she found that it exceeded EPA guidelines for nitrates. She bought an expensive reverse osmosis machine to filter her water. Then she initiated legal action to change the dairy's waste disposal protocol. The federal ruling, which recognized cow manure and urine as waste instead of nutrients, affects nearly 600 homes in the town of Outlook, Washington. Those homes will receive bottled water and reverse osmosis machines from the dairy. The ruling may also change dairy farms nationally, along with other animal operations.
Ultramarathoner and vegan Scott Jurek has become the fastest person to finish a supported through hike on the Appalachian Trail. He completed the 2,189-mile journey in 46 days, 8 hours, and 7 minutes, breaking the previous record by just more than 3 hours. Jurek started the attempt at the trail's southern terminus, Springer Mountain in Georgia. He averaged nearly 50 miles a day, crossing 14 states and traversing 515,000 feet of elevation change. The Appalachian Trail record caps one of the most decorated ultramarathoning careers in history. Jurek's resume includes wins in nearly every prestigious ultra race in the country. Among them, 7 consecutive Western State Endurance wins, 2 Badwater Ultramarathons, the Hard Rock 100-mile endurance run, and a runner-up finish in the Leadville Trail 100. Jurek also played a main role in Christopher McDonald's bestseller Born to Run, along with publishing his own book about being a vegan endurance athlete, Eat and Run. You can learn more about Scott and all his vegan ultramarathon adventures through his books, which you can find at online book retailers.
As reported by Planet Ark, SeaWorld has been accused of infiltrating an animal rights group in California. An animal rights group said that SeaWorld Entertainment Incorporated, known for its dolphin and killer whale performances, sent an employee on secret missions to infiltrate events organized by the group in an attempt to undermine its work. For years, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA, has campaigned against SeaWorld over its treatment of killer whales. In 2011, the group sued the company for violating the civil rights of a captive orchid. The suit was dismissed, however. Since then, PETA has repeatedly called on SeaWorld to end its captive orchids to seaside sanctuaries. PETA said the SeaWorld had become so upset that it deployed one of its human relations employees to masquerade as an activist, sending him on undercover missions at protests and organizational meetings in California. But most insidiously, he has repeatedly tried to incite people to object to SeaWorld to act illegally, stating that it's time to get a little aggressive. In a written statement in response to PETA's allegation, SeaWorld said it was focused on the safety of our team members, guests, and animals, and beyond that, we do not comment on our security operations. SeaWorld SeaWorld has been under growing scrutiny over its killer whale shows in which the massive marine animals performed tricks and stunts. In 2013, the company's stock fell 50% after the release of the movie Blackfish, a documentary about SeaWorld's orcas and the killer it trained. SeaWorld was subsequently sued by shareholders and its CEO resigned. They've really gone to extreme measures now. Coming up next is our conversation with Mike Hudak, former grazing chair of the Sierra Club, Ara Martirosyan, executive director of Sequoia Forest Keepers, and Todd Schumann of Wasteful and Unreasonable Use. They'll talk with us about how cattle grazing might be contributing to the drought in California. Joining us now on ACT Radio are Mike Hudak, former grazing chair of the Sierra Club, Ira Martirosyan, executive director of Sequoia Forest Keepers, and Todd Schumann of Wasteful Unreasonable Use. Let's start with asking Mike Hudak, former chair of Sierra Club's grazing team, to tell us a little bit about the effects of methane that's produced by livestock on our climate.
Okay, although methane persists in the atmosphere for just a little over 12 years, which is a much shorter time than carbon dioxide, it has a much greater ability to trap radiant energy over that lifetime. And scientists have worked out multiplicative constants that allow the environmental impact of a given amount of methane to be expressed in terms of the impact that would result from some multiple amount of carbon dioxide trapping heat in the atmosphere over a specified time period. So as regards the impact of cattle-emitted methane in California, consider that a little less than half of the 5.2 million domesticated bovines in the state are dairy cows and beef cattle that each year collectively release an amount of methane that, regarded over a 20-year period, is equivalent to the carbon dioxide pollution from burning about 21 billion pounds of coal or the annual carbon dioxide emissions from five typical coal-burning power plants. So, you know, you put that into the context of global warming, we've heard about many disastrous consequences of increasing the concentration of greenhouse gases, things like melting glaciers, melting Arctic sea ice, rising sea levels, deadly heat waves, but there's also drought. And we believe that one of the consequences of increased greenhouse gases may be the California drought itself. There's been three recent studies that have documented linkage between increased greenhouse gas emission levels, increased atmospheric heat, and something called the ridiculously resilient ridge, which is a persistent high-pressure ridge off the west coast of the United States. It's a vast zone of high pressure, nearly 4 miles high, 2,000 miles long, that's been forcing the jet stream along a much more northerly track, blocking Pacific winter storms from coming ashore in California by deflecting them up into British Columbia and even Alaska. It's also worth noting that John Holdren, the president's senior science director, has argued that climate change should be considered one of the drought's major contributors. And furthermore, Holdren's assessment is consistent with the argument presented in a recently published study by Kevin Trenberth and associates, which emphasizes how the impact of human-induced warming has intensified major climatic events in recent years. So, one likely consequence of using California's scarce water to grow crops that feed domesticated bovines is that it will increase the odds that California droughts will occur more frequently and with a longer duration and with greater intensity, all of which will make it likely that water will be even more scarce in California.
So these happy cows in California are really helping to contribute to their own future unhappiness by making it more likely that they won't have water to grow the crops needed to feed the dairy cows.
Well, that's a very likely connection.
Mike, do the politicians recognize this, and are they taking any action?
I'm not aware of any. I mean, there have been some changes in water use in California. I think Ara or Todd could speak to that better than I could because they're actually there. But I don't think that anything sufficient has been done to remedy these problems in terms of water use.
So, Mike, it's your position that the water that they use to grow livestock feed crops is actually unconstitutional in California. Why is that?
Well, because I believe it violates the California Constitution. Article 10, Section 2 of that Constitution states in part, and I have just a little bit of the text here, says, quote, "The right to water or to the use or flow of water does not and shall not extend to the waste or unreasonable use of water," unquote. So consequently, we believe that it's wasteful to use California irrigation water to grow crops to produce animal protein when a fraction of that irrigated water could be used to grow equivalent amounts of plant-based protein as well as carbohydrates. In the comment that was submitted to the California Water Resources Control Board, we cited a conservative estimate that growing legumes requires only one-sixth the water needed to produce a comparable amount of protein from beef. And that study also documents that legumes require less than half as much water as does milk production to produce a comparable amount of protein. So we also believe that it's unreasonable to use scarce water supplies to produce products such as livestock feed crops that are likely to generate more water scarcity in the future, as I mentioned. The logic being that feed crops promote livestock production, which in turn leads to methane emissions from belching cows. And as I said, methane is a greenhouse gas that contributes to global climate change.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that, you know, in a lot of the states, I think, are following what California is doing and what's happening. And, you know, a lot of California's first response was, is everyone needs to cut back on watering their lawns. And frankly, it's just a drop in the bucket when it comes to what they could do to save water by not using that to raise so many animals for food.
Right.
Thank you, Mike. Now I'd like to ask Ara Martirosyan, Executive Director of Sequoia Forest Keeper, some questions about almonds, livestock feed crops, and how they may relate to groundwater depletion issues in the southern San Joaquin Valley. Ara, there's been a lot of publicity lately about the almond industry, and many people are rushing to that as the next scapegoat for what's causing the water issues in California. Can you explain for us a little bit about how the almond industry is related to the livestock feed crop industry?
Well, it kind of relates to the nut itself. The almond nut is covered by a hard protective shell, and surrounding the nut and the shell is a covering called the almond hull. And because of their relatively high nutritional value, the hulls are collected and sold to the dairy industry as livestock feed. The mass of the almond hulls sold to the dairy industry is nearly twice the mass of the almond hulls sold to humans for human consumption, direct human consumption. In 2013, in Tulare County, for example, nearly 41,000 tons of nuts were sold. In contrast, nearly 75,000 tons of almond hulls were sold for livestock feed. So from one-half to a third of the water used to grow almonds actually grows the almond hulls, which are being sold as food for livestock.
You never really hear that popping up when people are complaining about how much water almonds take. They make it sound like it's all going into almond milk for vegans or something.
Right, and that's why we argue conservatively, I might add, that half of the water applied to almond orchards should be counted toward the production of almond hulls, which are livestock feed crops. So even though we all may love to eat almonds and drink almond milk, we may still be directly contributing to the economic power of the livestock and dairy industry in California.
And it just seems like the almond grove expansion continues despite the drought, and I believe in particular counties in California especially. Are there some other unintended water-related consequences to to this Almond Grove expansion?
A recent preliminary examination of the causes of well failures in Tulare River subbasin suggests that high groundwater use for irrigation of high water use feed crops, including alfalfa, cotton, corn, and sorghum, has been a contributing factor in triggering these well failures. Our analysis shows that production of livestock feed crops on nearly 250,000 acres of land in Tulare County in 2014 likely used 1 million acre-feet of water, and most of that water would have been groundwater. In September 2014, the California's first groundwater regulations were passed requiring groundwater sustainability plans, but local land planners could take until 2017 to establish the groundwater sustainability agencies, and those agencies could take until 2020 or after to create the sustainability plans. With tens of thousands of wells sucking water from the Central Valley's aquifer without regulation, the state could take immediate action to prevent more wells going dry by mandating which water-intensive crops should not be grown.
And you would recommend that would include almonds as part of the animal feed crops, including alfalfa, another really high-use crop.
Yes.
Besides the drought conditions and the low snowpack over the past 4 years, what other conditions have changed to cause this loss of groundwater and the subsequent collapse of land?
Well, since surface water supplies are increasingly limited, farmers and cities are tapping the underground aquifers in the state's agricultural Central Valley. While pumping groundwater has been going on for the better part of a century, with the increasing number of wells and improved pumping technologies, greater volumes of water are being extracted since 2000, with corporate farmers and others sucking the groundwater with longer and longer straws. We are now unsustainably pulling groundwater from ancient groundwater supplies. A major consequence of this pumping is that wells have been completely drying up over the last year, and Tulare County, especially in East Porterville, a total of 1,244 wells have failed in this Tulare County area over this time period, with an average of 30 to 50 wells going dry each week. Much acreage continues to be devoted to livestock feed crops through Tulare County, acreage that has been irrigated largely through the use of pumped groundwater over the last years. According to recent research from the U.S. Geological Survey, the San Joaquin Central Valley is collapsing and groundwater depletion is to blame.
Well, I've driven through there before, and I've seen one of those, like, meter sticks where they have, you know, where the land surface used to be, you know, and where it is now. And there was a lot of subsidence even before this last round of intensive groundwater pumping. Do they think the levels are going to subside even further?
They do. The land subsidence is leading to collapsed bridges, cracked irrigation canals and pipes, and twisted roads and railways. In some places, the ground is sinking nearly a foot a year. In addition to infrastructure damage, subsidence is increasing flood risk in some places as levees and canals also sink, which could eventually render them unusable. Compaction of the subsurface aquifer system permanently decreases its capacity to store. The subsidence occurring today is a legacy for all tomorrows.
And talk about a tremendous tax burden on all the citizens there to have to foot the bill for this overwater usage and all its effects on the bridges and canals and all the other things that you mentioned.
We know that animal agriculture is one of the main users of water, but they're also one of the main polluters. How has the pollution from, say, the dairy industry affected the water and quality in California?
That hasn't been tracked as much as the subsidence has been tracked because it's not easily measurable, but yes, there are instances where not potable water is being sold for use on agricultural fields.
Our next question is for Todd Schumann, who's from the group Wasteful Unreasonable Use. Todd, how do exports of alfalfa and other forms of hay worsen the water crisis in California?
Well, in short, there's only there's a finite amount of California alfalfa, California-grown alfalfa and hay that can be sold to the California dairy and the livestock industry. And so if there's major exports of alfalfa and other hays that are being sold to Japan, China, United Arab Emirates, South Korea, then there's less hay available to supply the local California dairy and livestock industry. So then prices go up for those industries if they're trying to buy hays to supply their cattle. So then they start clamoring, you know, for more water to be allocated to grow hay and alfalfa in California so that they can lower their prices. And so that creates increased economic and political pressure on the State Water Resources Control Board to direct more and allocate more surface water flows to grow more alfalfa, say, in the Central Valley to supply the dairies. When that happens, there's less water available that could be used to for salinity control in the delta, or less water that can be allocated to make sure the water doesn't get too salty for the delta smelt in the delta, or less water available to allocate to wildlife refuges around Los Banos that are starving of water. So it kind of creates overall pressures to use very scarce supplies for human purposes when probably more of that water should be used to actually protect some of our endangered and imperiled resources, wildlife resources. And the exports can be really substantial. Typically, you know, there may be they may range from anywhere from 5 to 15% a week of total California hay that's grown. But sometimes the numbers are huge. For example, for the week ending June 26, 2015, nearly three quarters of all California hay sales were for export. So that was like, and that's like, what was it? It was 25,000 tons of hay that was being sold for export. And that uses a lot of water. Each ton of hay usually requires like nearly an acre foot of water per year to produce. And that's about 325,000 gallons of water. So that's a lot of water being used to grow stuff that's basically just sold overseas. And it doesn't do anything to support California industries that could actually use that. Of course, in our view, we don't think that water should be used for growing for alfalfa or livestock feed in the first place. If they're going to use scarce southeastern California water to grow stuff, they should be growing legumes, drought-tolerant beans, stuff that becomes the basis for veggie burgers and stuff like that. But even so, you know, it still seems unreasonable to us now. I mean, if they're going to be using that water to grow stuff, it should at least be used to supply and support California industries and California workers.
Well, Todd, can you tell our listeners where they can find out more about this or how they can get involved to help solve this terrible water problem? I mean, of course, they can quit drinking dairy and eating dairy products that are grown from California. That would be a very nice first start. But are there any other things that our listeners could do?
Yeah, we're going to be ramping up campaigns on this. But one thing that is really useful is just to send letters to both the governor, Governor Brown, and the State Water Resources Control Board. The State Water Resources Control Board has a drought year water actions page where they post all the comments that people have sent in. And when you look at that page, you see that the farmers, they're sending in lots of comments. It's oftentimes they're kind of form letters, but nonetheless, they get their people out. And so that constitutes pressure on the board, and so the board listens to them. So we need to also be sending stuff saying, hey, we think it's wasteful and it's unreasonable to be using this water to grow livestock feed crops and supporting the dairy industry when it creates methane and stuff like that. And then hopefully counter some of the farmer actions on this. So if they go to the State Water Resources Control Board page, there's a page, kind of a complicated link, but it's they go to the drought year water actions, and then they'll see there's 2015 public comments, objections, and they can click on some links there. And it'll say comments, objections, protests, petitions for reconsideration submitted after April 6th. And if you click on that, you see all the stuff. and then you can see who you would send its stuff to. If they download our comment, they'll see that we always send our stuff to a guy named Rich Satkowski, who then kind of distributes everything within the State Water Resources Control Board.
Okay, well, thanks, Todd. We've been talking with Todd Schumann, Mike Kudak, and Ara Martirosyan, all experts on water issues and livestock grazing and how it contributes to the drought in California and probably could spread elsewhere as well. Thanks for being with us today, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
The pleasure's been ours.
Oh, I wish it would rain and wash my face clean.
To take action on this issue and to make your voice heard, go to sequoiaforestkeeper.org and look for the link where you can post your comments.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACK Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the listen button.
And if you'd like to learn more about a vegan diet, please visit the Vegetarian Society of El Paso at vsep.org. Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.
Sunshine, blue skies, please go away. My girl has found another and gone away. With her, with my future, my life is filled with gloom. So day after day, I stay locked up in my room. I know to you, night sounds strange, but I wish it would rain. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Cause so badly, I wanna go outside. Everyone knows that a man ain't supposed to cry. Listen, I gotta cry, cause crying just I just wish it would rain. Oh, let it rain, 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 rain.
Oh, how I wish it would rain.
Let it rain. Oh, yeah. Let it rain. Up, and no one will ever know that I've been crying, crying when I go outside. The world outside my tears, I refuse to explain. I just wish it would rain. Oh, let it rain, 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 rain. Let it rain. I'm a man and I got some pride. Let it rain.